Do you like my name?
I do. Is it a reference to something
It's
that
the
I'm not
Will. It's
getting?
the Willy Wonka
Yeah.
experience. Oh no!
Remember that? Oh God.
It's the
It's the
unknown.
unknown. Yeah, I've forgotten so much about that since that happened. You know, it feels like that happened like 10 years ago or something at this point.
I remember, and I think this is just going to be one of those specific memories I just
Oh,
keep in my
baby.
mind, regardless of it being like meaningless and nothing. But I remember finding, noticing, and then sending to our group thread. It was a meme of the unknown, but it was mashed up with the Pokemon
Yeah,
unknown.
it was like,
And
I remember
I remember
that.
getting two laugh reacts on that and being like, hell yeah, good job,
Yeah, I
Chris.
did it. And I'm done. It's off to bed for me.
Welcome to another episode of Why Did We Watch This, the podcast where three friends sit down, watch a nice movie. Not, no, sorry, watch a bad movie, have a nice drink, talk about what was good, bad, and how we could all do it so much better. I'm your host for this week's mini episode, Lee Delahanty.
I'm Chris Ravel.
And I'm Brendan Drischler.
And today we will be introducing the movie we'll be doing in 2 weeks and then having a little discussion.
Way
to
your
take
whole
one of
put your whole
wait.
discussy into it, Lee.
You're all discussing into this.
Way to take one of our words.
Sorry. You're right. That's exclusively for white gay men.
No, it's okay. We'll allow you to have a discussy as well.
Well, in any case, to get the business out of the way, in 2 weeks, we will be discussing 2002's Who is Cletus Tout?
I can't
Question
wait to
mark.
find out who he is.
Yes, this movie stars Christian Slater and has a wild cast, frankly, of Richard Dreyfuss, Tim Allen, Portia de Rossi, RuPaul, and many others.
Yep.
What a motley crew.
A lot of Canadians, one of them could be Cletus Tout. We'll
One of them,
never
yeah.
tell.
Which one of them is Cletus Tout? We'll never know.
Well, you'll have to find out with us.
Yeah.
I cannot get over truly what a weird, disjointed cast it is, and I don't think I ever will.
It's
No.
the best money could buy.
That is
Literally.
correct. The best answer you
Literally
have.
the best their money could buy.
Of course, to get through this movie, this ill-begotten movie from 2002, we will need a drink to get through it. What will we be drinking, Brendan?
The drink we'll be making for Who is Cletus Tout is called Cocktail Non-Specific. It's going to be 4 ounces of hot tea, 2 ounces of rum, 1 ounce of orange juice, and half an ounce of smoked maple syrup. I got some smoked maple syrup in New Hampshire a little bit ago, and I'm eager to try it in something. So this is our experiment. It's going to be very simple. Just combine all the ingredients in a shaker and stir it up until it's fully mixed. It will be hot, so be careful about that. Pour it into a mug and then garnish it with an orange slice, and that's
Yum. Sounds
yum.
nice.
Yum.
It's you know, we're basically in the dead of winter up here, so it's,
Yeah.
I think, going to be a wonderful pairing for that weather.
It's Absolutely.
been a cold, snowy one, I gotta say.
Yeah, it really has been. It's more
Yeah.
it's, yeah, it does feel it's been snowier than years previous, right? I feel
For
like it's been a
sure,
while
yeah.
since we've had like a very snowy winter.
Yeah, no,
Can
if
I?
you like look it up there, it's like pretty above average. Not record
Okay.
breaking yet, but
Right,
yeah.
right, right. But
Well,
still,
and
yeah.
you know, we haven't had a blizzard yet, knock on wood that we don't, period. You know, those kind of suck, but it's definitely like more consistent
Yes, it's just like the
snowfall
snow keeps
than.
coming. As soon as the last one melts, it's like, oh,
Yeah,
here's
right.
more snow.
Right.
So we need a lot of cozy drinks to get through this time.
Yeah.
All right. So for this week, I had a topic I wanted to discuss. Technically, we are into March, but
Well, no, this will come out just after Valentine's
just
Day.
after Valentine's Day, so this is
Yeah.
not that ill-timed because
Right, no, this is pretty close.
yeah, this is something I came up with pretty on the cuff, off the cuff, and so sort of might be a decent enough time to talk about it. I want to talk about our favorite TV couples pairings. I was thinking romantic, but I offered it up to be whatever else kind of pairing people wanted to discuss.
Yeah.
The TV focus is just like because those relationships often just have like a lot more time to like simmer and develop and feel more natural and organic than movies, which like movies are great, but like
Movies
I
are
think
great. I'm
I
glad you're saying it.
think I think I it's hard to like look at a movie that features like the sort of start of a relationship of any kind and have it end and feel like that's gonna be good. That settled. Do you know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like it's right. There's no way that you're in a stable point. I don't care how much time has passed. But anyway, it's harder to do. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it feels harder to do. It just feels it's just different. You get more of a slice than like a story and like a full narrative arc. So yeah, I wanted to just throw it out there. I suggested we all come with one or two or three of our favorite pairings and maybe discuss what makes them so good. And if we can sort of boil down like the common ingredients of like what makes these all work so well on the screen.
Interesting.
The little screen.
The little, not so little these days.
Yeah. Oh.
Have you ever noticed that telephones and TVs are getting bigger?
Bigger?
That's weird.
But some people watch CFU on their phones.
I know. So that's even smaller.
That's
how
even
come TVs
crazier.
Are so big, but phones are so little?
Oh my God.
You're both such raconteurs.
Yes. Yeah. What's such the deal with small phones?
Such keen observers of modern life.
Yes. I tune into Y-Watch for the cutting edge satirism.
For our fractured take on modern life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we want to just, I don't know how you want to do this. Do we want to go round robin one at a time or I don't have a good format.
I guess that's fine. I mean, I guess that's fine with me. I don't really know a better way to do it, frankly.
We're just going to talk about
my list open here.
I'll open it up. I'm going to just say my top. I kind of had three in my mind, and one of them I think is just going to end up being top that I'll talk about. And I think I don't really need to discuss the other two in any level of detail because the things that I like about the first one are going to carry down pretty strongly into the other two. My top is the one I went with for number one is Patrick Jane and Teresa Lisbon from The Mentalist, which is
I called privately.
You didn't necessarily call it. There could have been two others that are probably my two and three.
Uh huh.
I don't know who these people are.
Well, of course you don't, Do you know the basic premise of The Mentalist?
I'm not sure I do. What's the gimmick?
Okay, so. The Mentalist is there's psych and the Mentalist. They're kind of like two sides of the same coin.
One is drama. The other is comedy.
The other is comedy.
I get it.
They're both about people who pretend to be psychic. But in psych, it's like Sean is a smart person who solves crimes and he pretends to be psychic because it's the only way he can break into the sort of like assisting the police industry.
Okay.
It's sort of an excuse at the time and it just sort of balloons out of control until like most of the show is him lying about being a psychic.
Okay.
To help
I vaguely know psych.
And that was a comedy and it's heavily rooted in a lot of like pop culture references. The Mentalist came a few years into the show at psych. Like I don't even know if it's on the same network. I forget, but there was kind of jokes a little bit on psych about The Mentalist being quite similar in some ways. I'm pretty sure where The Mentalist is like a weird inverse where it's a drama. It's very like it's much darker and it's more serious. Okay. And Patrick Jane is a former pretend psychic, like a carny. He like grew up in the carny lifestyle and he's a pretend psychic. And then he made it really successful as like a TV personality, like a sort of like famous TV psychic.
Okay.
And then he sort of like baited out a infamous serial killer on national television by saying like, yeah, I know all about this serial killer. Mm-hmm. And then said serial killer kills his wife and young daughter to like punish him.
Okay.
And now his like whole life's mission is to find Red John and kill him for vengeance.
Okay.
And in the service of this, he like goes to the CBI, the California Bureau of Investigation, and like teams up with Teresa Lisbon, who's like the head of the unit there. And because he proves his usefulness in using his former fake psychic skills, aka his ability to like read people and deceive them and trick them and basically like toy with people, pushing their buttons and such, for like he gets confessions out of people, he gets them to admit things. It's, you know, he's a very tricksy guy.
So just a quick question then before you get into this more. I'm just curious here.
Yeah.
In The Mentalist, is he still pretending to be a fake psychic,
no,
or does he just use that skill set to help?
He stopped taking he like, in fact, he's like, there's like so much, he starts at such a place of like remorse and guilt and self-loathing that like he just like threw away, like he basically like went to a mental hospital after his family got killed for like a couple years. And he comes out and like he hates fake psychics and he like discredits them at any opportunity. Like he's like done a whole 360 on the whole thing.
Okay, cool. Just wanted
to. So he doesn't. So he just is like, no. None of this shit is real.
Yeah.
It's all bullshit. But what I do know is you're fucking lying and you're fucking lying and I know it because of XYZ.
Okay.
So he's not pretending to be psychic anymore because of what it did to him, what it did to his personal life. So it's like that show is like the psych really never had much of an overarching plot. They developed like a serial killer for him to play with for a couple seasons. Mm-hmm. But The Mentalist is a procedural with Mystery of the Week, but always with this looming goal of like, we got to get Red John. And when we do, it's kind of been like, it's sort of this, like for a lot of the show, Patrick Jane's pretty clear that he is going to kill him. And Teresa Liston's pretty clear that like, well, I'm really not going to let you kill them because I'm a law enforcement officer. Right. And it's kind of like this thing, you know, this awkward thing. So yeah, I picked them as number one, because it just has like a lot of the ingredients that I think I like in a long-term romance arc. Because at the end of like episode one of season one of The Mentalist is like I remember that so vividly as sealing the deal of like I have to keep watching this show because it's like you're introduced to Patrick Jane, who's like a fucking loose cannon. He's horrible. He like lies to the whole team constantly. Goes off on his own, risks himself, risks the case, whatever. And they're constantly yelling at him. And Teresa Lisman's basically like the one who's like his primary babysitter. So she's the one that has to deal with his bullshit the most as the one who's like in charge. And at the end of the episode, he's like successfully identified and nabbed the killer. But he's had to do that by like sneaking out, lying to them, endangering his life, and then like barely making it out in time and like in any corner of, you know, violating probably some protocols as well. And they're all really pissed off at him afterward because he's lied. And he kind of like creeps up to her desk, like looking really contrite. And like, she's like, I don't want to hear it from you right now. And he like leaves her this little like origami frog. And she's like, what is this supposed to make it all better? And then he doesn't say anything. He just kind of walks away. And like the frog is like the way that he had made it. It sort of like does like a little jump that sort of startles her a little bit. And she sort of smiles because it's like funny and delightful. And then this sort of ends on like him turning around and like seeing that his frog had like made her laugh. He does this little private smile and walks out. And I was like, that's it. I got to see these two get together. It's like this moment. It's a really good arc because for obvious reasons, there's a lot of reasons they can't be together. For one thing, he keeps saying he's going to kill a man. For another, he has made himself the target of a serial killer who basically has already killed people that he attaches himself to. And so the idea of attaching himself to anyone else while there's like a serial killer alive is bad for any number of reasons.
Yeah. Understandably.
And he's the level of trust you can put in him is very low on her end. So it's like, as much as like they do eventually trust each other,
right,
he's constantly like lying by omission and tricking her and saying like, well, I had to because I didn't want you to lie to your boss about this. So I didn't tell you I was going to do something bad.
Right.
So it's just kind of this, it works really well as like a long-term arc, but I would say if not by the first episode, like by season two, it's like pretty obvious that they're both very interested in each other the whole time. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of like, they can't work really. But it works. It ends up working because they find Red John. He does manage to kill him. He gets him alone and kills him, and he zips off to some non-extradition country where he hides for like a year. And eventually an FBI agent who used to be hunting down Jane because he was basically suspecting that he was trying to kill Red John the whole time, comes to Jane in this country that he's hiding out in and is like, hey, listen, if you come back, we could use your help. It's one of those like recruiting former people, like, you know, you'd be useful or whatever. And he's like, no, for the whole episode. And then at the end, he's like, yes, only if Lisbon can come with me and be in the FBI. Like, so yeah, like there's this whole arc of them in season six of like, we're going to work for the FBI and her sort of getting new dynamic with him where she's not like in charge of him, but more like they're sort of equals and in a sort of like FBI unit. She starts dating Pedro Pascal, who's another FBI agent. And everyone around, especially the FBI agent that recruited him, is like, hey, are you gonna, like, talking to Petra Jane, like, are you okay with this? And Petra Jane's like, of course I'm okay with it. I'm so okay with this. It's the most okay thing in the world. And he's definitely not okay with it. So by the end of season six, he finally, at the, like, 11th hour, is like, you know what? You're right. I'm going to come clean. I'm a mess of a human being. And for any number of reasons, I, like, lie a lot about my feelings. But I do love you, actually. And if that's too late, that's fine. But I just had to get to a place where I could say it. And I've said it. And I'm going to leave now. And she ultimately decides to, like, stay with him rather than go off to Washington, D.C. with Pedro Pascal.
Shocking.
Shocking, yeah. And so season seven, I think this is one of those things, too, where, like, they were basically given the season to be like, hey, it's your last season. Have fun. And so, like, season seven is sort of just a pre-planned, like, they knew what they were doing and they knew that it was the last season. And so it's a really lovely season of, like, mysteries every week, but also what are they like once they're together? And it's sort of this evolving, like, he has a lot of obvious anxiety about her still being in the FBI. Because he's already lost a spouse before. He's not sure if he can handle that. She's worried about, you know, why he won't take the wedding ring off and if he's, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it's a lovely, I don't know, it's overall, it's a lovely arc. It makes sense. These are two people who are both, like, very guarded, cautious individuals who, like, they're not honest with their feelings that, you know, are for, you know, obvious. Mm-hmm. And I think the flavor of that is part of why I like it so much, but I think it's just allowed the time and the space to play out the way it would naturally. Like, there is no shortcuts taken, if that makes sense.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah. Who knew that Simon Baker could touch the heart so powerfully?
Yeah. I will say, like, Simon Baker visually doesn't really do it for me that much, but he's quite charming. His like persona is quite charming, which is why he works as Patrick Jane so well.
Right. I've seen an episode or two. I enjoyed the show. I just didn't really like.
No, it's not really like
all the way through.
I wouldn't have put it as either of your type of show. So I'm not surprised that you just wouldn't have watched it. But.
Yeah, that sort of feels probably partly why I would never watch that sort of thing. The rest of the trappings feel like not my thing.
No, it's very much like it's every other episode. Like, it's forgettable mysteries, which I find most mysteries kind of forgettable. Mm-hmm. The fun bits that aren't the couple for me are like watching, like, you're there to watch, like, Patrick Jane do shenanigans. He do be doing a lot of shenanigans, and they're often quite funny and amusing. But yeah, that's me.
So how do you want to go now? Which
I don't know. I mean, does anyone else want to talk about?
Well, but I guess what I'm wondering is, I know we all prepared a few.
A skit.
Like, do we just, like, run through the whole list? Or
yeah, I mean, I'll say that obviously Sean and Juliet were my second. I've kind of talked about why they're not number one. And I also had Lucifer and Chloe, which is a wild procedural called Lucifer. But I like Lucifer.
Oh, right.
They didn't stick with me as much as Patrick Jane's.
Lucifer was fun.
I watched
a few episodes with you.
Yeah.
Chris, do you want to go?
Please go for it. I will. I can bring us home.
Do you want to go? But
Sure. Okay, so not to start with a platonic couple, but I'm going to start with a platonic couple. I'm a really big fan of the HBO show Somebody Somewhere. Have either of you watched that?
I don't know that I know what that is.
It's the show from Bridget Everett. She's a theater and cabaret person in the New York area, but she's been in, like, movies and TV for a while. But in real life, she, like, grew up in this place, Manhattan, Kansas, and she basically made a show about, like, what if she didn't leave? So it's primarily a comedy, but it has very affecting drama as time goes on. And
I do vaguely know of this show now that you say that. Yeah, that's vaguely ringing a bell now.
Like, her and Jeff Hiller.
Right. I remember that Jeff Hiller was on.
Yes.
This. Yeah.
Well, and they're the couple I want to talk about because they were rushed. The series is basically just like, oh, these people who are have, like, very, very simply but powerfully portrayed, like, human struggles, basically, like, finding connection and friendship and, like, levity and joy. And it's a very, like, sweet but emotional show. And it's like Bridget Everett's character Sam is trying to basically get back to life after taking care of her sister, who, like, passes away, like, from cancer before, like, the show begins. And Joel is he's a gay man who is training to be a pastor at like a local Protestant church, and like loves to sing, and they just become friends. And this series only got like 3 seasons, and they were kind of rushed into a finale, but they used their time really effectively, and they just developed this very beautiful but believable friendship between these two characters. And by like the series end, they just have this like very beautiful, simple, believable conversation where Joel said, like, I think you're just like my person, like just, you know, beyond an idea of that being romantic, just like we're such soulmates. And I don't know, I treasure the non-romantic connections portrayed between men and women on TV. I feel like that is not something we get enough of, and I think it was really beautifully done. I also wanted to say, I was thinking about this one. I'm also a very big fan of The Good Place. Eleanor and Chidi are a couple, TV couple, I really enjoyed. Is that a spoiler if it takes some while to get there?
I've
spoiled like the biggest plots of the Mentalist.
Lee did a series run through of the entirety of the Mentalist, so I think you're good spoiling.
Okay. Yeah.
And I kind of had to explain that they kill Red John in mine, so you know.
Oh, I get it. I'll do a what Eleanor and Chidi mean to me, just so I can maybe leave Brendan some room to expand for himself. But I love their dynamic a lot. I love that this show that is basically about trying to improve and grow as a human and like be better to the people in your life is super beautiful, but it's also just like very well exemplified by this relationship. They both learn from each other despite the more obvious like teacher and student dynamic that like runs throughout it. I also really enjoy that it felt like a will they won't they that didn't feel obnoxious. It felt earned. It felt like they were like, I don't know. For it being such a high concept, in many ways kind of goofballs fantastical show, I found it to just be a very believable, organic, and very funny relationship. I really enjoyed it. I love that they both improve each other. Her kind of starting as like a terrible person.
If I could, I'll just like pop in real quick and piggyback on that one specifically and then let you continue. Because like we might as well, you know, go into this while we're here. I basically had written down the similar, like pretty much almost exactly what you said. The whole central conceit that I had for the two of them was basically if the point of the show effectively from, you know, I guess arguably like the second season onward sort of is supposed to be like, how do you become a better person? Like, how do you become like a good person or something like mm-hmm. that? Then that's kind of almost like perfectly analogous to what a relationship sort of is, you know, mm-hmm. if in theory it's the two of you both learning how to be better people, you know, whether you're doing it with another person, whether you're doing it with a friend, whether you're just doing it for yourself on your own, that just general concept translates very directly to what I think is the center of a good relationship. Mm-hmm. So, you know, while I think there are probably other shows that I, you know, find funnier or probably would enjoy more if I had to like put together a top 10 list of shows, I think that is something that The Good Place does very well. They're both incredibly believable. And I think it is one of the rare times where I think you can see characters organically grow and better themselves throughout the course of a show. Sometimes it feels like characters will just sort of grow, you know, for the sake of plot expediency, mm-hmm. just so that like, you know, we can say in this episode, and now like this character has learned not to be so selfish. And then the next episode, things are a little reset almost, you know, like, you know, to be fair is kind of a little true to life too. You don't like level up and you don't level up and then immediately be like, and now I'm good forever. And I've learned how to be a good person.
No, but the development was like so earned here.
Right. Yeah. And also just given the fact that it is a work of fiction, you kind of need that in a work of fiction, you know, like to a certain point, fiction has to have that falseness to it. You know, it can't be inherently realistic, which I think is something that The Good Place does very well. And I think particularly Eleanor and Chidi, as kind of the main couple of the show, exemplify that. So, yeah, I totally get why you went with them, because that was kind of my same thoughts.
Well, I love that we had a brainwave.
Yes, we did.
We shared a wavelength there. Yeah, no, it's I absolutely agree about the, like, is it the most, like, hilarious comedy I've ever seen? No, but I do think it was very powerful in other ways.
Yeah, I think it's a very well done show at the end of the day. Like, it's extremely well written. So
and then for my last one, this is another one where I'm like, was this the best show ever? No, but I really like what they did here with this relationship. Is it's from Our Flag Means Death. Did either of you watch that while it was on?
I still have to watch the last two episodes.
I don't really feel like I'm spoiling much to say there's like a central character between, it kind of becomes ensemble after a while. But anyway, the like main character, Steed, and then Ed, the Blackbeard.
Yep.
And I enjoy the show. I enjoyed the show a lot. It wasn't like, again, the most like hilarious comedy ever, but I did really enjoy what they were doing, particularly with how they represented a pretty like diverse spectrum of like sexuality and gender on the show, which I thought was really cool. And I really like, in particular, these characters' dynamics. I don't think it was going to be an easy sell to be like, Blackbeard is this crazy, scary, like very violent pirate. And then be like, oh, but he's also going to be kind of like tender and sweet with this man. And they handle that swing really beautifully. And they have a good, like, I don't know, Gruff and Pris vibe happening.
Yeah.
Steed, based on a real guy, but he was like this gentleman pirate who basically had his gimmick was that he was very fancy and almost like foppish. And he's portrayed kind of, I think, with more of an effeminate thing happening. But anyway, it's just like a very, despite, again, it being a very goofballs show, the relationship felt like an organic and like kind of like believable development between these two very well realized, even if heightened, characters. And they were just a lot of fun to watch. There's an episode with Rachel House and Minnie Driver playing, again, historically real lesbian pirates. And they just have a really fun double date episode. Anyway.
Yeah.
So those are my three.
Well, I guess to spring off that, since I've already kind of covered The Good Place with you, Chris, there's not really a whole lot else I need to really say there, I think. I think you pretty much said it all, and I, you know, popped in with whatever else needed to be brought up. You know, like I said, probably not one of my favorite shows ever, but a show that I think is extraordinarily well written and that, you know, sinks. It has like an ending that feels justified. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel emotionally manipulative. So it's a very well done show, and I have to give it credit for that. Consistently being entertaining and well conceived and well realized for all 4 years, I believe it was, that it ran, which is not always easy to do. Going off of that then, so what I had come down to is the thing that I was sort of having to think about whenever I was given this assignment, mm-hmm. is that I feel like a lot of the shows I like don't really have this aspect to them, and it doesn't bother me, and I don't care. I mean, there are certainly shows where I like couples that have been paired together. You know, for example, something like Frasier, I like Niles and Daphne, but it's one of those things where also, like, as I'm watching it, you know, do I necessarily think that this is a relationship that was, like, built successfully throughout the series? Like, no, it's kind of a relationship just based on the fact that Niles sees Daphne and is immediately like, my God, she's beautiful. I'm in love with her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they do address the fact that, like, throughout the show as they get together, that he was sort of viewing an idealized version of her versus who she actually was. But it is one of those things where, like, well, I don't know if I watch a three-camera sitcom for, you know, a prime example of an ideal relationship or something like that. It's certainly not something where, like, I want to go back through and be like, I want to see all the highlights of Niles and Daphne getting together. You know, it's like, you know, yeah, it was a good episode when they finally you know, he finally opened up to her and said how he felt about her, and they ran off together. Like, yeah, well done, good episode. I liked the resolution there, but it's not something that I feel the need to sort of seek out. And I mean, even things like The Simpsons, which I love a lot, it's like, yeah, I guess Homer and Marge have a good relationship and that these fictional characters are still together in a fictional marriage. But like, also they don't, you know, because it is a cartoon comedy show. So like every so often you have to do an episode where like, oh, Homer does something very stupid and Marge gets very mad at him. And like, oh, will they get back together? Like, yeah, of course they'll fucking get back together. So that was kind of my thing, I guess, going into this. I guess also I don't watch a lot of dramas or procedurals, so that kind of narrows things down. The one that I did kind of hit on that is more of a traditional drama, that had a central couple that I found interesting would be Penny Dreadful, which I felt like might be something worth going into, sort of here, the relationship between Ethan and Vanessa, which teeters constantly on just being friends versus being an actual sort of couple. And kind of, I mean, the show effectively ends because the end of season two is basically Ethan being like, I have to go to America, I'm being taken to America, see you later, and Vanessa being like, well, shit, and spending most of season three apart from each other. And then, spoiler alert for a show that's been off the air for several years, she dies at the end of it.
Yeah,
so it is kind of like, is this a good example of a relationship, or is this just one that I find kind of interesting, perhaps because it has all the sort of horror trappings and the destiny aspects to it, you know, where it's like, he is destined to be with her. He is the wolf of God, so he must like be her protector and things like that, you know? So it's like, I don't know if that necessarily makes it a good couple, you know. It's not what it's the thing that I kept thinking throughout so many of these is like, are any of these couples that I could see justifiably being in a relationship for the rest of their lives?
Well, that's... I don't know if that's a standard for this many that we have to feel beholden to, because
no, that's true.
It's kind of like your favorite, right? And like, there's right. There's fiction for a reason, because like,
right.
I don't think I'm advocating for a relationship where you lie a lot to your partner, or
right
don't tell her about your feelings for like 10 years. But like and I again, for that, I think it's like it's a different genre. It's this sort of horror drama where it's like supposed to be tragic almost, and so I think it kind of works that it's like, whether or not fate has its hand in it, it feels appropriate and cathartic in the moment to see them get together.
Right. Yeah. And it, you know, like I think that one of the other things that I don't care for at all is like the concept of shipping. Like, I just don't fucking care about it at all. Like, I've never shipped couples in anything ever, as far as I can remember, just because it's like, I'm not 12, you know, it's like,
wow, what a hater.
Yeah. Fuck them. It's just sort of like, if they get together, cool, that's great, I like it. If they don't get together, maybe I'll be mad, but I'm not going to be like, you know, oh my god, I was hoping for them to get together the whole time.
I think you take a very like facile approach to what shipping is, though. A lot of people ship and they don't care if they get together or not. They're just like, I want to have a world where they get together and I want to explore that world. But I'm not the 12-year-olds are the ones who maybe cry when they don't get what they want internally, you know. You're 12 internally for that. But a lot of shippers are just saying, like, I like these two together and I don't need them to be together on the show, but I'm going to fantasize about it in my head.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the thing. I did, to me, maybe just because I only ever see or deal with the most psychotic extremes of that.
Maybe
that's why I don't care for
well,
it.
Well, I don't know where you're looking, but, you know, Reddit's obviously a cesspit. And
yes, I mean, everything's a cesspit, Lee.
Yeah. But yeah, plenty of people who quote-unquote ship, like, especially, you know, if you're, like, on AO3, it's just people who want to write their little weird fantasies about their characters that they like.
I think that's perfectly fine. Like, I don't care if people do that, you know. Like, I'm not saying that this is a bad thing and you shouldn't do it. It's mostly just like, I don't care about this, you know. Like, it's simply not my thing. So I feel like there's sort of that aspect going on with me with a lot of media that I consume, I guess. The last one that I kind of had then was, I thought the idea of doing a platonic couple would be interesting as well, just to sort of go off what Chris was launching. But the one I had was a little different because I was thinking less about, you know, a man and a woman being a platonic couple. But the one that I had thought of was Troy and Abed in Community.
I had thought about that as well.
I mean, it to me, that feels feels more interesting. I guess maybe I'm more invested in the concept of people being friends with each other than I am with people getting together, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I would rather see a lengthy story about just people learning to like and appreciate each other than necessarily being like, I want these two to get together, or I want, like, any number of these people to get with any number of... Yeah. So, I mean, I think the reason also that I bring up, like, Troy and Abed particularly is, you know, I think it was sort of a central focus to the show. I think when Donald Glover left the show, it was a hit on the show. It was a little bit harder to sort of keep that steam going to a certain point. And I do think it was sort of done organically, you know, especially when you, and I think it's also sort of like, it's kind of fun because if you listen to Dan Harmon talk about how the show was initially pitched, his thought was that Troy and Pierce, Chevy Chase's character, would sort of like be a team together, and that Abed, I think, would get paired more with Jeff. Mm-hmm. But then for whatever reason, like, he realized that there was like chemistry between Danny Pudi and Daniel Glover and thought like, oh, actually, let's get these two together. So it's in a weird way where sort of like life imitates art, or art imitates life, I suppose, you know, where like these two weren't supposed to be friends, but then you just sort of like put them in a situation where they have to interact with each other and you're like, oh, now they're friends now, which feels like a very organic sort of way as to how friendships often start, you know. It's just kind of like you're forced into a situation with a group of people and some of them you will become much closer with and sort of, you know, become very good friends with. So that was something that I felt was worth kind of commenting on in that respect. And yeah, maybe my whole takeaway here is kind of what I said there, that I'm more interested in shows that portray friends getting together and like strengthening a friendship with each other. But I feel like also on the other hand, I'm also very big on the sort of, you know, a show similar to like Seinfeld, where no one really has like a strong emotional connection to anyone, you know, and it's just sort of like it's there for jokes and that's about it. So
yeah,
well, I don't know, maybe this is just how I approach media, I guess.
It's interesting because you, like, I think when you're talking about citing some of the shows that you like and how it would be hard to like care a lot about their relationships in them, they're all sitcoms, half hour sitcoms, which I agree with you are like, I don't think it's impossible, but I also feel less attached to sitcom couples because, again, I think for me, if it's like a realistic relationship, it can't all be haha joke, which all sitcoms are, but like some of the ones you cited were pretty like light, right, in tone. The Good Place is not, and I think that's why it comes up. I've totally glazed on, I could not get out of a procedural head when I was thinking of, I like really was racking my brain for like other examples. And now that you mentioned sitcom, it's like staring me straight in the face would be Nick and Jess from New Girl as an example.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's
a couple I really do like. I like just seeing their arc and how they like, they come together, they break up because it doesn't work. It's very messy. And then, that is very, felt very good and fun to watch. And natural. But I also wanted to come back to the whole talk about, when you were talking about, The Good Place and the sort of will they, won't they that felt believable. I think that's kind of what I wanted to talk a little bit about.
Specifically,
but like that is like a, obviously for romance specifically, I don't know that it's ever been done platonically, but is a TV sort of like staple, this like concept of like, will they, won't they? And it often like shows can often like live or die by it. I don't know if that's still the case, but they definitely did in the past. And I don't know if there's like a way that, if we can name some things that like make that work or like sink or swim, that dynamic, because, I was certainly thinking about that for The Mentalist and how I, in my head, The Mentalist was never like a, will they, won't they? It's like, can they, or won't they? Like they are like, it, from my perspective, they're starting like, literally a character says at one point about them, like, you guys are half in love with each other already. Like,
yeah, it's true.
But like, they're starting from that place and it's more just like things that are keeping them apart that are physical and logistical versus like, ooh, are they going to have developed feelings and act on them? It's like, no, the feelings are there. There's too many things in the way from acting on them, but you can like see how they manifest more and more through every season and like small things and gestures that happen. And you know, there are just things that keep it that are a barrier, but are there any other things like from The Good Place or from anything else where, that make that sort of, will they, won't they work or not feel, I don't know, stretched out or annoying? Or
I mean, it's almost like the example sort of that I think is really interesting is something like Cheers, which I know neither of you two really watched.
I did.
Yeah.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Cheers, yeah.
Okay, I didn't. I thought you hadn't for some reason. But so obviously, like, this whole Sam and Diane is kind of almost like the prototypical, yeah, like, will they, won't they TV relationship. And it is one of those things where, like, yes, they get together and then they break up for a while. And then it's sort of like, oh, will they get back together again? And it is, I think the thing that sort of wisely worked out is when Shelley Long wanted to leave Cheers, that kind of made the show, for obvious reasons, stop being a will they, won't they sort of show, where it's just sort of like, okay, this actor has left the show for whatever reason. You know, there's many reasons have been stated as to like why this sort of happened or what was going on behind the scenes or what have you. But the thing that sort of worked out is, I think, like, someone, whether it was Shelley Long, whether it was the writers or what, like, sort of wisely realized, like, we cannot sustain this indefinitely. Like, a will they, won't they becomes insufferable when it plays out for, like, so many seasons, so many episodes, you know? And so after she left the show, it became less of, like, a, oh, who will Ted Danson get with, and more of just sort of, like, a hangout show about various relationships between these people, which I think is sort of like a very intelligent pivot for the show to have made, because it would not have sustained itself for like several other seasons with the whole, oh, will they get together and won't they get together? And then, frankly, you also have the issue of when they get together, like, what do you do with the couple? How are they a couple? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, this is something I feel like I've talked about with movies more so, but it's one of my biggest pet peeves in sequels to movies, where a couple has gotten together by the end of the first movie, and then in the sequel they are broken up, and it's like, and now they'll get back together redoing the same story beats because we don't know how to write them as a couple together, and we don't know how, like, how do they work without that, like, ooh, sexual tension, will they get together sort of thing going on. Like, it's a thing that, like, Ghostbusters 2 does, National Treasure 2 does, and, like, I fucking hate it every time it comes up in a movie, because it just really reeks of, like, well, audiences liked it when they weren't really together and were sort of like verbally sparring the first time, so I guess we have to keep doing that again. And it's just like, I think it speaks to the problems of a will they, won't they relationship, is that, you know, you have to at some point commit to it and figure out how to transform the relationship from there.
Yeah.
Well, it can't go unresolved, right? Especially if your show ends up making that the central driving engine of the antics, which is why I think, like, Cheers is actually a very good example of that pivot being done well, just because I think it comes down to a question of, like, how much you really want to centralize this relationship. Is the show about that, or is it funnier if it's, you know, just a show about this, like, fun cast of character? You know, like, the Office is an example of, like, that mileage, like, way varying, right?
Yeah, I think that's definitely an example of a show where, like, once they get together, things really sort of start going downhill and the energy starts, like, petering out almost immediately. You know, it's like you have, like, the stamina, like, you have, like, the juice to get, like, one or two more seasons out, and then after that point, it's like, now
this show went
happens?
On too long anyway.
Yeah, no, I don't think anyone will argue that point. And it feels like it's one of those things that even they tried to sort of then recreate with Michael and Amy Ryan's character, where, like, but then, like, and then, like, they get together and leave the show, and then the show still goes on for, like, what, two more fucking seasons? And at that point, it's like, okay, guys, like, you have to stop now.
And, like, this is Kathy Bates stops by.
Right. Yeah, James Spader.
Yeah.
This is why, like,
Idris Elba.
Yeah, I think this is why, it's so the will they, won't they thing too is often, like, because again, it's often considered, like, to be the death knell of Moonlighting, because they got together at season three, and then seasons four and five were, like, just an incredibly downhill hike. And I think that it just comes down to writing.
Yeah,
I do think that, like, the interesting thing you brought up is, like, the sort of scintillating tension or whatever, which is, like, a part of Moonlighting for sure. And it was, they talked about that in Remington Steele too, but I gotta say, I've been rewatching Remington Steele, and, like, how could you call that a will they, won't they? They're fucking kissing each other every other episode. it's are they or aren't they? Like, episode by episode in Remington Steele. It's, like, constantly, like, yeah, I mean, we are both very attractive people, and of course we want to fuck, obviously want to fuck, but, like, every time we start, I remember that you're, like, a scheming thief and that you're too uptight. And, like, there's this constant, like, so it's, that's more of, like, I don't know how you could call that.
There's a push-pull, but it's not will they, won't they.
It really isn't, no, because Like, you lose track with them. Like,
it's Batman dating Catwoman.
I mean, even that, like, that to me just sounds like infuriating, you know, like, as a television audience, it feels like every episode is like a fresh slate. It's like a tabula rasa, and you're like, okay, where are we now? Like,
because I was talking I was rewatching it because Ken was watching it with AC, and we couldn't even agree on, like, whether or not they were together in a certain season. I was like, I mean, I don't know. It's really hard to tell. Like, literally, in one episode, she's like, I'm done with you forever. And the next episode, they're fucking still working together. And he's like, well, I do still like you a lot. It's like, well, make up your fucking minds, guys.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, I feel like some of that might also just be like an aspect of the less of the, like, we just did not have a focus on the serialized story,
yes,
you know, for such a long time at that point.
Yeah, what we cared about is the chemistry.
Right, right. So we weren't really, like, they weren't planning out, like, some sort of, like, seasons-long arc for the characters to go through. It was just kind of like, I don't know. Like, they'll fight, they'll get together, they'll fight, they'll get together.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to talk about, which is a thing with at least two of my shows, and maybe Psych as well, but I can't remember, is the victory lap, which is what I call it, which is like the Mentalist got it and Lucifer got it, where it's like, we are renewing your show for this is it. This is the last season.
You got to wrap it up.
And Lucifer, they were like, you have season 4 and then season 5 is all for you, baby. You do what you want with that. Like, and so you get these shows that have more graceful endings.
Yeah.
And I think that if a show is given the opportunity, if the writers know what's coming in terms of space and they know it's the end, then you can handle the sort of resolution of that really well. And that's kind of why I picked The Mentalist, because season 7 is, like, to be honest, the one that I would rewatch the most, because I actually find it more interesting to see how they interact once they're together and how it's not, like, smooth, where it's like, they have episode 1 is like, they're really awkward around each other because they don't fucking know how to interact as a couple yet. And then in various episodes, it's like, you know, these anxieties come up of like, hey, remember how my wife and kid died? Well, maybe you shouldn't work for the FBI anymore. Have you thought about that? And, like, you know, so there's, like, constant, like, you know, it's sort of you get to see some of that tension ease out and, like, their relationship sort of smooth out into, like, something a little more stable by the end. And Lucifer got to do that too. Lucifer got, like, a really crazy beautiful ending, because again, that show went nuts. And it's something that I wish we allowed to happen more often, but I think as the TV sort of evolves and we get less and less of these longer form TV shows, maybe that'll stop being the case. But I do feel like we're still in an era where shows come out and we're waiting for, like, you know, writers are told, you get this season and maybe we'll give you more.
Right.
And I think that needs to stop.
I feel like it's an issue of the pendulum too far the other way, right? Where for a long time it was like every show is 21 episodes per season, and, like, that's what it is. You simply have to work with that. And now it's like, you get 6 episodes per season, you get 1 season every 3 years, and it's just kind of like this is not conducive. Like, we need to find, like, a middle ground here, or more safely say, some shows need this and other shows need this, you know? I feel like we've kind of, like, perilously swung toward the every TV show now is just 6 episodes and comes out, you know, every 2 years on a streaming service, and then you will binge the entire thing in one day and, you know, forget about it for the rest of your life.
Absolutely.
So it's just that I think is kind of a bigger problem. And I mean, sort of speaking on, like, the victory lap thing, like, I feel like this is kind of, you know, we can sort of, like, wrap this up, I guess, too, because we've been talking for a while. But I feel like this is kind of, like, another whole issue in general, because, like, when you're talking about that, what it almost sounds to me is, I'm just curious, and if you can explain this very succinctly and very quickly, were any of the shows where you specifically mentioned having victory lap seasons, were they shows that got an additional season that did not expect to get it?
I don't remember the production details, so I couldn't really tell you that.
Okay, because I feel like I've heard of shows where it's like, okay, like, we have to wrap up this season. Like, this is going to be the last season. We got to wrap up. We're planning to wrap it up. We're going to, like, put everything in a nice bow around it. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, you're getting another season. So now you have to, like, good luck. Think of something to do for the next year.
Lucifer might have been that a little bit, because I remember a couple episodes in Lucifer season 5 were like, let's explore a character that we didn't get to explore fully. The Mentalist, I could not tell you.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm a little curious about. I feel like that's something that I might look into at some point, like TV shows that got a bonus season out of nowhere and then had to spin their wheels and figure out, like, oh shit, now what do we do?
I'm intrigued by that concept. I was trying to think of any I knew of, but I none occurred to me, but
yeah,
I'd be interested.
I'm sure there are definitely examples that, like, I know, like, even from shows I probably watched where that happens, but off the top of my head, I just can't. I feel like more common, obviously, is the whole, like, and now you're canceled. No resolution for anyone. Like, what you did is the end of the show.
So it says on May 10th, 2014, the series was renewed for a series for the seventh season, which premiered, and later announced it as the final season. So I think that they got the renewal for season seven after season six, and were then told, like, that's it.
Okay.
So it was basically a season where it was a normal, they probably were hoping for more, because to end on just like, yeah, I guess we love each other is like a little abrupt.
Yeah.
But they did, I think, know going into the writing of it that it was it.
Yeah. I mean, I almost do wonder for something like that, if they had sort of written that ending of the sixth season thinking like, maybe we won't get renewed, so we need to sort of like kind of
at
put a little bit
them,
of button.
At
right.
least get them to kiss or something.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. At least be like, well, let's go off and be a couple together. Like, even if you get no further closure from that, at least you can walk away from the show being like, whew, okay, they're together. Everything's on the table. Great. And if we don't see any more, at least that's taken care of. And then when you like have another season, it's like, oh, okay. Great.
Yeah.
I guess that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in that case, I think, yeah, it was a nice thing for it to get a seventh season, and it wasn't wasted. It didn't feel like filler. It felt very like useful, like stuff that you were getting out of these characters.
Yeah.
And I'd have to check Lucifer. We'll do a post thing. I'll come back with Lucifer.
Postmortem, yeah.
And see.
Yeah, I'll start thinking about like that question that I posed to, because I'm a little intrigued now by that sort of like last minute reprieve.
Yeah, right now it just says during the course of the series, it was canceled after three seasons, was revived by Netflix a month later. The following month, they picked up for a fourth season, 10 episodes, renewed it for a fifth and originally final season.
Okay.
In 2008.
So there it is.
The series was later renewed for a sixth and final season. So I think that they like season five ends with Lucifer basically becomes like the new god. There is an arc for season six, which is about like there's a girl shows up, a girl angel, and it's like, I'm your daughter, and you just got to sort of deal with that. But that's the one that has like some side stories while Lucifer and Chloe figure out what's the deal with this angel named Rory who claims to be your daughter. She claims to be their daughter specifically, if like from the future. And it kind of goes, it's a nice season, but that one definitely does have some stuff in it that's like, oh, we got more episodes. That one's truly a victory lap where it's like, hey, let's do an episode about like Ella or something. Like, we didn't do that, you know, let's do an episode with just her and her having a fun adventure.
Right.
The other one, Mentalist, was I think more of like a normal renewal, but then they knew it was the last season. And so they were like, great. Do you think at any point, if that's the case, can you tell them it's the last? Can you tell NBC, hey, NBC, I'll do it for you, but that's it?
I think you can. I think more often that like they don't usually want to, you know. I feel like especially if the actors want to move on, then you can certainly be like, well, this is it. Like, we're not coming back for another season. But I feel like a lot of the time it's like, oh, well, we still haven't wrapped up all the plot points. Like these people still want to play the characters. It's a good paycheck for everyone.
Because like I could see that being the case with The Mentalist, where it's like, we don't have anything else in us after this. Tank's empty, right?
Yeah.
Like, because I remember Googling like Mentalist earlier, and it was like, why was The Mentalist canceled? And I was like, that's one of the sort of default questions that I know those are probably like generated typical questions when you Google any TV show. Why was The Mentalist canceled? And I was like, what a question to ask. They didn't. It was done. That was
right. I was gonna say like, well, like it's ran for many seasons.
Yeah, it ran
like,
seven
and
seasons.
Now it's over.
Yeah, it's not like
got married by the end of it. It's fine. That's like,
right. It's not like a one and done season where it was like, oh no, they were canceled unceremoniously after three episodes or something.
Right.
Like they did it. You
it's
did
like,
it. Yeah, guys.
See why The Office got canceled. It's like
because
long.
Yeah, because it was on forever, it was expensive, and ratings were declining. What do you want from us?
Yeah.
I wish they had more of a chance.
Anyway, I think we've had a good discussion. I'll trim some of this. Obviously, it'll be trimmed down.
Yeah. No, that's good.
But it was fun. I'm glad we talked about this. Good
to see.
Yeah,
it was a good springboard.
Good smash. We should maybe do one in the future about like sort of supporting characters. Talk about our four. Did we do that already?
I'd have to look.
I don't think.
We might have.
I mean,
we've done this in the show for too long.
I was going to say, that sounds... So. Yeah, speaking of things that have gone on for too long, that does sound vaguely familiar. I'd have to check our list, but maybe we limited it to moves or something. I don't know. I'll have to look.
Yeah. Well, if it's if we have it on TV, I'm just going to spend my whole time talking about Irving from Severance, so... but yeah, guys, come back at us in 2 weeks. We will be doing Who is Cletus Tout, a movie that I'm sure, if you've heard of it, I mean, God bless you.
Yeah, more power to you. Well done.
Yeah. And if not...
Are you okay?
Go watch it on YouTube for free right now. You'll be ready to discuss it with us.
Please don't give away the secret ending of who Cletus Tout is.
The hallmark of how you know a movie is good and successful is it is available free on YouTube.
Right. Many accounts have dumped it on YouTube and no studio is taking it down.
Yeah. You know the visual quality is. Mwah.
That's right.
Until then, let's buy it out. Yep. Oh yeah, draftpack.com/drawwild.com.
Yeah, draftpack.com website. Yeah, that's all you need.
Draftpack.com. Yeah, and then go to the podcast.
Podcast.
Blah, blah, blah,
apps.
And
yeah.
Bye.
Bye.